This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott.
Well, I have to tell you, I hear phenomenal things. I hear your wife is a lovely woman.
She is. She's
I don't
fantastic.
Know her, and this
she is
a total
absolutely the love of my life,
of
and she's
I
right
said.
Here. And why don't
Good.
You apologize
Good.
For her?
No, I won't
right
do that
now.
Because I said nothing wrong. But I do hear
so
she's a lovely woman.
The fact is that the American people are sick and tired of hearing about your damn emails.
Thank you. Me too.
This is not a cage match.
Secretary Clinton, do you want to respond?
No.
Governor.
No.
The New Hampshire primary is months away, but debates between Republican and Democratic candidates have already provided a treasure trove of quotes and gaffes and memorable exchanges. While Republicans are gearing up for yet another debate next week, we thought we'd remind you of some of the historical zingers like these.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
There is no Soviet domination of Eastern Europe, and there never will be under a Ford administration.
You know who voted for it? You might never know. That one. You know who voted against it? Me.
And they brought us whole binders full of women.
I will not make age an issue of this campaign. I am not going to exploit my opponent's youth and inexperience.
NHPR reporter, host, and resident historian of presidential oddities, Brady Carlson, is with us. Brady, great to have you with us.
Hi there.
Have there always been presidential debates?
No, it's a relatively new thing. We sort of harken back to the Lincoln-Douglas debates in the Illinois U.S. Senate election of 1858. On the presidential level, the Kennedy-Nixon debates were the first, certainly the first televised debates, but it was not a normal thing. And in fact, even after Nixon-Kennedy, it was not a normal thing. Richard Nixon did not debate in 1968. When he ran again for the presidency. He did not debate when he was running for re-election in 1972. It wasn't until Ford and Carter in the 1976 election that you started to see debates become a regular part of the election cycle.
But they've become a huge feature of elections. I'm thinking of the 1960 debate between Richard Nixon and Jack Kennedy, that first televised debate. Huge news, but did that set the bar too high and expectations too high?
Well, it certainly set a kind of standard that you're going to have this very formal. I mean, the mechanics of the general election debates often tend to have that same style of the two candidates, the Republican and the Democrat, standing at podiums answering questions from a moderator. I mean, what's happened over the years in the same way that television as a whole has changed, debates have changed in that you're trying to score both on visual points, you're trying to look presidential, or you're trying to look like a strong candidate if you're running for a different office, and you're also trying to hit with that quick television moment. We had the zingers right at the beginning of this conversation. You're trying to score that moment, and that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with policy positions or you're standing on a particular issue. It's simply about what is the one thing that someone is going to take away from this event as a television program. That's kind of what it's turned into.
Right. The fringer candidates do not always get included, do they? Is there any precedent for that?
What tends to happen in the primary debate process is that it's not always been managed by any one entity. It would be a consortium of news organizations, maybe a political party, maybe the League of Women Voters, kind of a hodgepodge of different groups and organizations, and they would make their own criteria. And there's always going to be somebody who takes issue with those criteria. And so you will see debates that will have 10 candidates in them. You might see some that have only four or five. And that has come up over the years. That came up, in fact, in 1968, there were a number of Democrats who were running to succeed Lyndon Johnson. And only a handful of them were part of the one debate that took place in California. It was Robert Kennedy and Eugene McCarthy. You didn't see Hubert Humphrey, who was also in the running. George McGovern had talked. In those days, the primary process was not as well defined in the same way that the debate process was not as well defined. Most candidates were trying to secure support at the convention, which was where the actual nomination was made, not through the primary process of winning votes and winning delegates in state primaries and in caucuses. In New Hampshire, the debate over which candidates should be allowed into a debate really came to a head in 1980. And there's the famous moment in the Republican debate. This is sort of a complicated story, but the long and the short of it was because of arguments between the campaigns about who should be included, whether it should just be Ronald Reagan, the former governor of California, and George H.W. Bush, or whether it should be the broader field that included a whole number of Republican hopefuls. Ronald Reagan ended up paying for the debate himself and including all of the candidates. What happened was that there was a continued argument about who should be up on the stage and who should not. And Reagan got into a debate with the moderator, who he called Mr. Green. Mr. Breen was his name, of the Nashua Telegraph. And they really got into it.
Let's hear a clip from that. This is from 1980.
Would the sound man please turn Mr. Reagan's mic off for a minute? Is this on? Mr. Green,
did you turn that microphone off?
You asked for me if you would. I am paying for this microphone, Mr. Green.
That's a real moment. I mean, something is really happening there. It's memorable and quotable. Is that what candidates are trying to deliver? You know, the soundbite that everyone will remember them for?
They're trying to present a moment that will, in a way, encapsulate who they're trying to present themselves at. And for the supporters of Ronald Reagan in 1980, they said, here's a guy who was directly confronted with some opposition, and he took charge. He said, that's what you need in a president of the United States. And they saw that as a big turning point for him trying to fend off what was then his chief primary opponent, George H.W. Bush, and winning the New Hampshire primary and eventually the Republican nomination for president.
Speaking of zingers, we did hear the where's the beef comment from Walter Mondale to Gary Hart in 1984. Now, here's the one that won quite a few over to John McCain.
In case you missed it, a few days ago, Senator Clinton tried to spend $1 million on the Woodstock Concert Museum. Now, my friends, I wasn't there. I'm sure it was a cultural and pharmaceutical event. I was tied up at the time, but the fact is...
And you hear the roar from the crowd because he was literally tied up at the time. So that sort of generational conflict between the people who were fighting in Vietnam or in McCain's case, is a prisoner of war at that moment. And sort of characterizing Hillary Clinton and the Democrats as the peaceniks and the hippies just hanging out and taking drugs.
But that also gave John McCain a sense of humor. You know, it is through the long line of a political campaign, there are policy speeches, there are positions, there are platforms that are taken on things. But I feel like that was one of the things that was more memorable about John McCain's campaign. Is that true?
Increasingly, candidates want to present themselves not simply as in command of the facts and strong leaders, but also very relatable, very likable. Again, to use the analogy that presidential debates have become TV programs, you want to be a likable character. You want to be the one character, that the breakout character that everybody relates to, that everybody likes, that everybody tweets about. They like what you say. They like the way that you say it. They like how you look, and they like what they think you stand for.
Well, here's one of Joe Biden's 2008 breakout moments.
Rudy Giuliani, there's only three things he mentioned in a sentence: a noun and a verb and 9/11. I mean, there's nothing else. There's nothing else. And I mean it sincerely.
He kind of hit it out of the park with that one.
That's one, and you know that because you hear that to this day. When you hear Democrats responding to something that Rudy Giuliani said, even here in 2015, they will almost always refer to that Joe Biden quote when they make that reaction.
Well, sometimes the zingers don't quite land as intended. Let's hear just a little montage here of epic fails.
I'll tell you what. $10,000? $10,000 bet?
I'm not in the betting business.
Oh, but okay.
I don't think I'm that bad.
You're likable enough.
Thank you so much.
You know, lifting whole passages from someone else's speeches is not change you can believe in. It's change you can Xerox. And well, I just don't think. No, but, you know, but Barack, it is. Because if, you know.
Some memorable lines there.
Not everybody can pull off a good zinger. And, you know, whether that really tells you much about whether a person would be a good president of the United States or not, that has become sort of the moment that at least the national media points to and says, well, that line didn't land.
How about the role that the media plays here? I mean, if we're trying to keep things above board and really about the issues, what role is the debate moderator and the questions playing in how these candidates respond?
Well, I think, you know, to be frank, a lot of times you know, media organizations are holding debates because they bring in a certain kind of audience. You know, they want to have people watching their station. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they are trying to hit policy positions or substantive issues the way that some people would prefer. There have been a number of attempts in the last few years to try and shake up the debate process. There was a famous one where there was a Democratic presidential forum in the 2008 campaign, and there were questions coming from YouTube. YouTube was one of the media sponsors of the debate. And so one of the voters, well, at least they said he was a voter, was dressed up as a snowman. And he asked a question to the Democratic candidates for president of the United States about climate change while dressed as a snowman.
Hello, Democratic candidates. I've been growing concerned that global warming, the single most important issue to the snowmen of this country, is being neglected.
One of the things that the debate tradition does is exposes, you know, the unguarded self. You get asked a question you're not prepared for. You don't have a talking point for. Kind of exposing the human frailties. Here's a famous example.
The third agency of government, yeah. I would do away with the education, commerce, and let's see. I can't. The third. Sorry. Oops.
I mean, that really was the Rick Perry's blown it moment.
And you could see I was actually not watching the debate when that happened, but I was following it on Twitter, and you could see the tweets were not that tweets can be catastrophic, but the reaction on social media from sort of the movers and shakers in the National Press Corps was, that's it. His campaign is literally over. And he did stay in the race for a while afterwards, but never quite recovered.
And it's moments like that that have made some of these presidential campaigns ripe for parody. Let's remember some of the famous parodies of presidential debates.
Rather than squander the surplus on a risky tax cut for the wealthy, I would put it in what I call a lockbox.
Governor Bush, your response.
I don't know what that was all about. But I will tell you this. Don't mess with Texas.
Senator Palin, address your position on global warming and whether or not you think it's man-made or not.
Gwen, we don't know if this climate change, whoosie, what's it, is man-made or if it's just a natural part of the end of days.
Yeah, debates are great fodder for satirists. Saturday Night Live has had not only Sarah Palin's imitation by Tina Fey, but also Dana Carvey's impression of George H.W. Bush in the 1980s, which was originally much more cutting than it has become. There was the famous parody debate between Bush and Michael Dukakis, the Democratic nominee, and Dana Carvey as Bush creates this very long string of kind of half sentences, and then Dukakis, played by John Lovitz, just looks over and says, I can't believe I'm losing to this guy.
You still have a minute 20, Mr. Vice President.
Well, sure, more has to be done, but the program is in place. Make no mistake, we are doing the job. So let's just stay the course and keep on track. Stay the course.
You still have 50 seconds left, Mr. Vice President.
Well, let me just sum up. On track, stay the course. 1,000 points of light. Stay the course.
Mm-hmm. Governor Dukakis, rebuttal.
I can't believe I'm losing to this guy.
So debates are great entertainment, great for parody. But to summarize this real question, I mean, too many candidates means too much competition for the soundbite, the zinger, not enough substance. What do you say to that?
I would also add to that that there are concerns there are just too darn many debates. In the 2012 campaign, the Republican candidates were in 20 debates, including an evening debate in Manchester, New Hampshire, followed by a morning debate in Concord, New Hampshire, the very next day. So there have been a lot of efforts not only to winnow down how many candidates are in the events, but how often the events themselves take place. You can look at debates a lot of ways. You can look at debates as a way to learn about the candidates. You can look at debates as a way to look at how candidates relate to each other, what it might tell us about how they would perform in office. You can look at debates as a kind of entertainment, a sports kind of event for people who like to follow politics. It's always worth looking at what debates are and how they play out. What is important, I think, is to not assume that a debate is going to reveal anything that we don't already know about a candidate or a campaign, that it may just be an interesting chance for a candidate to either distinguish themselves positively or negatively.
Brady Carlson, thank you so much for joining us.
Sure, thanks.
NHPR reporter, host, and author of the upcoming book, Dead Presidents, Brady Carlson. You can find his list of curated highlights from presidential debates at wordofmouthradio.org. And the debate continues on Word of Mouth. Up next, college debate clubs get a freestyle hip-hop makeover. That story after the news.